Due to start at 9 o'clock. My apologies from where I'm seated. That we start, I was delayed in another meeting. Today we have two items on the agenda. Maybe just before we start with those two items, we'll just have to go through quickly on the apologies. One, we do have an apology from the minister who has to leave us for another engagement in her cabinet responsibilities. The deputy minister has since been booked off by the doctor. She is, we should all be proud of it, that and be joyous that she has since been discharged, but she since has continued to be booked off by the doctor. Member Gallo has written, also apologizing that he cannot make it to this meeting. Similarly, we think of Tebekulu, who has also tendered his apology. Mrs. Baker is attending to a family responsibility. The one issue that we have before us is a public protector's report, which we shall have to start with. The minister will speak to the report. We have been having a copy of the report to ourselves, Mr. Basson. And thereafter we shall conclude with a report on the rainwater matter. Without a waste of time, as we had started a bit late, we shall allow the minister to take us through, and then later we take a submission on a briefing by the rainwater on the matters reported in the media on the 30th of October 2016. Minister, without waste of time, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Chair, and honourable members, representatives of the department. Chairperson, you wrote to us requesting that we must come and share with you the outcome of a report by the public protector, which the former public protector, which has since become public knowledge that the public protector had looked at this matter and had applied her mind, having interacted with ourselves. It was primarily based on a complaint she received from one of the representatives of the department to the Lesotho Highlands Water Commission, and that she has been serving there since 2005, and that in 2009 she was promoted to be a chief delegate and permanent representative of the Lesotho Highlands. The responsibility of a chief delegate, honourable members, is that of representing the interests of a government on behalf of the minister, a minister who is a representative of the South African government and the interests of South Africa. In summary, there were allegations that the complainant, Ms. Zodwa Dlamini, had presented before the public protector, and this actually came out after there were several media statements, perceptions and allegations that have been made. I must make this quite clear that I am here to present the report of the public protector, and I think one of the realities, including the legalities, is that I do not represent Dr. Zodwa Dlamini here. I've come here to present to you a report that is also not mine. This is Thuli's report. It's former public protector's report about me. So all I can tell you is that what is contained in this report are the processes that had to do with the matters that have been brought to her attention. We agreed on a date and agreed also that we will sit until we conclude the matter. And indeed we said we had a delegation of both the Public Protector's Office and a delegation that was led by myself, including the advisors and the senior officials from the department. What was the primary bone of contention in that issue were what was perceived out there and what she had also raised. And in the final analysis, what was a contested view were the allegations that were leveled against the minister that we engaged upon openly and fairly between the public protector, the minister, myself, and Dr. Dlamini and her representative. In all those issues, what then came out was a determination that then said what is contained in the report from page 6 up to the agreements were as reflected on page 6, 5.9 up to 5.14.4, and on the basis of that, then there was the issue around the decisions that had been arrived at. On all other matters that were discussed, whether there was political interference by the minister, whether there was any prejudice on the side of the minister and all those things, I think the report of the public protector does actually give you what the public protector had determined. I would not want to be the former public protector. I'm presenting before you, Chair, as you have asked, that you must come and bring the report of the public protector. Where we are now, the matter is done and dusted. The project is going on. We do have, for the record, a chief delegate, Mr. Beki Nkosi, who is a lawyer by profession, who has been a member of an executive committee. He has led government departments. He's also affair with issues of representing a government and the people of South Africa, and that his responsibility is to deal with those issues. So that's briefly the report, Chairperson. I wouldn't want to labor much on it, but to, as I have said, it's a straightforward report. It's a public document. The unfortunate thing was that the public protector left before she could send it, but we did receive the. I'm sure in the interest of time, we didn't attach the letter that was written apologizing for the delay of sending the report. But we have accepted the apology and we have moved on. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Minister. Any comments, questions?
Thank you, Chair.
I saw Mr. Mguni, noted Mr. Basson, and noted Mr. Choke. In that order. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Mr. Basson. Good morning, Mr. Choke, the Minister, and all officials of
that. Yeah, do not be shy to speak to the mic.
Oh, I have forgotten.
There's a mic here.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the report, and the Minister. You know, looking from page 9, I've been looking at page 9 since the this thing was given to us until page 11, which indicates that which indicate the decisions that were taken by the public protector, which indicate to me that these are binding. These are binding, and I hope if it can also be an indication from the minister whether these decisions are being taken care of or they have been taken care of. But I don't think there's much that you can dwell upon, because there has been a neutral person that came in there and dealt with the issues. So for us is to appreciate that the report has been presented to us and that is done and dusted. Thank you very much. I don't think we should dwell much on the issues. It's just that are the issues being taken care of? Has everything been finalized for the person to be given with all the recommendations that have been done? So thank you very much.
Mr. Pazza.
Thank you, Chair. Just a question to the Minister. What was the final cost for the department to reinstate her, pay her back, and buy out the contract? Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Tom.
No, Chair, what Honourable Nguni has sort of a particular with me, the point obvious is that in the even one of the portfolio committee meetings, we did receive a verbal brief from the minister, and I think what we need now to do is to really appreciate the fact that the minister is back again now with the report. We'll have invited the Office of the Public Protector to make a presentation to the committee, but I think she has done well in fact in presenting this report, and agree with the findings of the Public Protector, and the matter has been resolved. Obviously, if it has some other implication, as the Honourable Person raises, maybe we can get that clarity. But I think I'm very happy that the department, in fact, the minister is giving leadership on this issue. She's not a runaway. She presented the report fairly and acknowledge where there have been weaknesses and challenges, and I think we're happy about this this approach. And that's leadership, Minister, and I think, as we always say, that you lead by example. You know, when things are wrong, you're the first one that says things went wrong here, and then you again correct those things, and that's how leadership is done. We want to appreciate again your response to the committee in bringing this report here.
Okay, thanks for that. Maybe just one last from my side, page 11, whether indeed there has been any compliance to 6.3. Further, it reads as follows. Further, taking into account that the complainant's contract has come to an end, the department must, within 7 days of this decision, in full or final settlement, pay the complainant an amount equal to an increase of 16%. Has that been obliged to?
Thanks, colleagues, honourable members, and thanks, honourable Nguni. Yes, indeed, all of us understand the decisions of the public protector are binding, so we are bound by them. We had to do a lot of work together, and hence I'm saying we started in the morning, we left late at night. Working on this, and we then left it to our technical teams to deal with the modalities, and we concluded in this fashion. So we have implemented all these decisions with immediate effect, and on the matter I want to really settle, we didn't buy the contract back. Yeah, that's Dr. Dlamini. When she was recalled, remember what I said in my presentation, she was a representative before. She went back to TCTA, so she still had her job. So there was no buying her back. She still had a job. The only thing was she was no longer the representative of South Africa, and that is all that happened. What we ensured was that by the time the report was released, this contract, her contract had expired, and all that we did was to honor the issues. All these issues that colleagues are asking, I want to put it on record. This is what we have agreed upon. This is what we have implemented, Honorable Chair. So that's the long and short of the report. Compliance with the report of the public protector and implementing its decisions and outcomes. As initially we had agreed on, we will bring different role players who had to work with DERCO on the compensation of people with foreign posting. We had to work on the issues of leave. We have to work on all the other things that have to do with the compensation of an individual. Thank you very much.
At the risk of opening a new discussion, which we shall not do, also at the risk of having to venture into other unrelated matters about the binding decisions of the Public Protector. That Public Protector Act says, subject to you contesting those decisions in a court of law, if you do not go through that route, then they are binding. But you have the responsibility and the right as any complainant to go and contest those in a court of law. So they necessarily may not be binding in that regard. As I'm saying, subject, I'm sure lawyers can speak better than I do with their own language. It's always been a contested issue, I'm aware. As I said, at the risk of opening these two other discussions that are unrelated, I just thought, let me just make that point. I'm sure the fundis will speak better than I do. Ms. Tepperson?
The Minister has not answered my question, but I understand that. I will ask that question through a written question to the department.
Which is?
On the cost. What did it cost the department eventually? The bad debt. But the Minister doesn't need to answer that now. I accept that.
No, let me answer you.
Okay, let's take Mr. Chaka first.
No, I was going to say that if a question is asked in a portfolio committee, the minister will answer it. There's only for Mr. Person to go to parliamentary questions. One question. Just believe it here.
Minister?
No, I think what you can do, you have the presentation there on page one, Mr. Person. Surely with your cell phone and the calculator, you can look at what is the overall from 5.1.3, which deals with the compensation. You can also look at what she was entitled on page 9. Get to page 9. This is what you have, and you can add up all that. If you ask a question, we'll send the copies of what is contained here. Thanks.
Why don't we do it the following way? Let's flag the question for a later and give ourselves next week on Wednesday for that question to be brought here in the committee. With those concrete, I'm sure it's easy calculation now. Anybody can do.
You don't need to go to page 7.
Yeah, I am on page 7.
Yeah.
It does tell you that 2,097,943.42.
You're on a low number, yeah.
Then backdated is 2,097,000. Yeah, that's what it said here. No, it's 2,097,000. And then backdated, but again, the single point I'm raising, which is a principal factor, is that if it could be just a one paragraph, you know, a bit be brought here. That dated to 2009 with interest of 16%, that's all what you are asking.
That's all I'm asking.
Okay, let's agree without having to argue on that one. that
if the very member has already asked an oral question on this matter.
No, it is to be brought here. We dealing here with parliamentary with the committee session.
All I'm saying is nothing different. What we'll do is to extract all this. Next week Wednesday, you will get this. Not even next week Wednesday, before the end of the day today. What the honourable member wants, he will get, and I hope
let me put it this way.
Can I finish? That we then make that commitment to give him the same information that is here with 16%, and that will be the extent.
I've ruled on the matter, and it's closed. We are bringing the answer to this committee on Wednesday or by Wednesday next week. That's all that I'm saying. It's a small matter. It doesn't really require much of any discussion. I think in those few words, having heard the minister bringing before us this report of what actually transpired out of the investigation by the public protector formally, it then puts, if you like, to rest this whole matter. Thanks for that, Minister, and thanks for the guidance on the issue. Okay, without waste of time, we shall then go to welcome Mama Kaula. we shall then have to take, Minister, you shall have to take us, taking that you are still here with us. You shall have to take us through the briefing on the rainwater, the article that we are about, that raised some concerns. This committee saw it fit that the matter must be brought to the committee, and the rainwater having to account on what is really happening in that regard. We all do or did receive copies of the submission. Then we shall take it from there. Thanks, Minister.
Thank you very much, Chair and Honourable Members. Chairperson, we have a delegation of Rand Water Board led by the Chairperson Advocate T.V. Hashatse. She is accompanied by also the CE as well as the COO of Rand Water. They are going to respond on what has been asked of them to come and present before the portfolio committee. I am going to invite the chair to then present before you, in line with what you have required the Rand Water Board to deal with. Just two things that I would want to also clear is that we may recall that this was prompted by an article that was on one of the weekend papers, and one got a feedback from the chairperson with regard to their response that was not fully taken into consideration by that weekend paper. However, they themselves as the board have got a better appreciation of what has happened around the matter, and it is on those bases that I do believe that the board has the responsibility therefore to make members of the portfolio committee understand the background and the issues related to what was raised by the newspaper. For the record, I think what will be important, and I would really plead with members of the committee, is to afford Rand Water to give you a report of the project. If there are issues that you had picked up in the media, we know that it is not all that is accurate that is reflected in the media, and therefore your questions and issues and matters of clarification must also help the committee to understand the functions and how Rand Water and any other implementing agent in the water sector functions, so that then we do not only have to interact on the basis of what is perceived to be, because what is on the media space is what is perceived to have been. Finally, now you have the responsible board and its management here before you, who will have to then present before you the real issues related to this particular matter that has been raised. Advocate.
Thank you.
If you can also introduce the other board members, not all the time that we have the privilege of getting to receive, you know, the majority or all the board members of any of these entities. We had requested that the full board complement must be part of our session. Unfortunately, they got a message quite late, but a sizable number of them have made it through, if we can also introduce them. And also, if you can also give an indication as to, you know, this one comes from this region or that province, if there is any such thing. I am saying that because some of us might wish to identify, you know, themselves with some of those members at times, you know. It's a practical thing, so that, yeah.
Good morning, Chairperson and members. Thank you very much for the opportunity to come here, as is proper, for us to come and answer questions and account on these issues. Chairperson, yes, as I had indicated, unfortunately there are board members that couldn't be able to make it, but I will introduce those that are present. Next to me, of course, is the Chief Executive of Rainwater. He's an ex-officio board member. And then next to him is the Deputy Chairperson of Rainwater, Ms. Sophie Mulukwane Machika. And next to her is Ms. Nomsambileni. On the other side, we have Ntate Lefty Munyokolo, who's also a member of the board. And sort of behind him, we have Ntate Lefadi Makidinyana. He's also a board member. And next to him, we have Mr. Kovadia, a board member. I think that's all in terms of board members. And then we have the COO with us and the acting CFO also present in the room, Chairperson. With those introductions having been done, Chairperson, let me start off by saying, obviously, when this article appeared, it raised a lot of questions. And similarly, it raised questions and concerns in the mind of the board in terms of what is happening in relation to this contract, because the article itself, while it states directly a number of issues that it says have been done in contravention of policy or in contravention of legislation, it also throws out lots of innuendo and suggestions of just improper or wrongdoing without necessarily stating in detail what that is. But it leaves a very bad taste in the mouth, and obviously was quite a dent in terms of reputational damage. So just as I can imagine, you know, the committee members reading that article would also have been concerned, the board itself was concerned, and so we set about trying to get an explanation from the Chief Executive as the Accounting Officer as to further detail in relation to that. What immediately became available to us when we assessed the information is that City Press sent a list of questions to Rainwater. Rainwater responded to those questions, we believe, and gave quite extensive information. But then City Press proceeded to write the article in a way one could say ignoring the questions, the answers that Randwater had given. One would expect, where you have two different versions, that responsible reporting and balanced reporting would require you to say, this is the allegation, this is the company's response, and then maybe do their own analysis or leave it to the reader to make their own conclusion. We don't mind which one. But at least to represent what the company has said in terms of its own answers. And we found the article to have been unfair in relation to having ignored the answers that were given by management. And then also, you know, the other thing that was problematic is that the article seems to rely on a single unnamed source. And that, to us, seems to be like irresponsible journalism, to rely on a single unnamed source and then ignore the responses of the person about whom, or the company about whom you are reporting. But nonetheless, even though at first glance this is what appeared to us, we didn't stop there and went further to try and make sure, as is our legal duty as a board, to make sure that our systems and our controls have perhaps missed something, because that is the suggestion that hangs in the air, is that something wrong has been done. This company is being favored for some nefarious reason. This company is getting repeat contracts that it doesn't deserve because of poor performance and delays in the past. So those were the things that we then went into. And also the other issue was the issue of whether there are then advance payments that are being made improperly to this company, which flows and gels with the idea that this company is being favored in some way. One of the first actions that was taken is in relation to our audit committee, which in the process of in committee discussion with the external auditors, posed the question to the external auditors to say, in your work that you have been doing for Randwater for the past 3-4 years, has this company crossed your path in terms of the audit work that you have done and the samples that you have done in the procurement space? And even if it's not related to this company, the practices that are being alleged as being practiced at Randwater, do they ring a bell? Do they sound like practices that maybe you have detected, or maybe even though clearly you haven't made any findings about it, is this something that, you know, sounds familiar for you? And the external auditors indicated to the audit committee that one of the contracts had in fact been one of the sample contracts audited. Recently the Station 5 project had been audited in the previous audit, and that they hadn't picked up anything. So that was the first level of inquiry that was done. The other thing was to look at other risks and checks and balances that are being raised by this article, and then for the board to engage with the CE in relation to that, and to ask him to review these particular contracts in order to understand whether at any point where the relevant legislation and Randwater policies perhaps short-circuited in any way. And we received responses from the chief executive, which by and large informed the presentation that I'm going to get into just now. But also, you know, when something like that comes up, as a board that is charged with oversight, you then have to actually check yourself and ask yourself whether your processes are robust enough, because we rely on the checks and balances that we set up, the controls that we set up. We rely on the assurance providers, being our forensic department, our internal audit department, and the external audit as a final line of defense to check whether our systems are being abused in any way, whether there's maladministration, whether there's corruption in the system, and things like that. And then you have other policies, such as, for instance, your staff members have to have declarations. We go so far as chairperson to have, for instance, lifestyle audits conducted annually, not all on all employees, but a forensic unit zooms in on a particular area, and procurement, as you would imagine, and anyone dealing in finance would be part of the areas that are regularly zoomed into, in order to try and pick up whether any of our staff members might be abusing their position for financial gain, which this article can also raise that kind of suspicion in one's mind to say, if somebody in Rand Water and cahoots with this company, this why the company is being favored, then you would expect that they're doing it for some benefit. So, you know, these are the processes that we have and the checks and balances that we have that we then ran through those again to try and see what areas could actually be deserving of improvement. Without saying, you know, even before we get to the point of whether the things in this article are true or not. And then some of the things that had recently been done as continuous improvements, they're not triggered by this, for instance, is in the area of procurement, which is continually a difficult space for many entities. What we just recently introduced is that before all contracts are signed, after the adjudication process, before a contract is awarded, we want our internal audit to go through each and every one of those contracts and do a probity check as the last line of defense, because before that contract is signed off, and our audit committee has put this in place and checked with internal audit whether they have you know, sufficient resources to handle the number of contracts that we award annually. We were assured that they do have that, and they were even told if they don't have enough resources in terms of manpower, they need to come back to the audit committee and say that. So I'm saying this as an illustration of the fact that we have continuous improvements in our checks and balances and in our controls without necessarily being triggered by these kind of things. One of the other committees we have of the board is the Capital Infrastructure Committee, which is a committee, capital investment committee that exercises oversight on major infrastructure projects. So that committee, for instance, would be the committee that management has to go to if they have to seek adjustment outside of the authorized vote, and they would have to go and justify and demonstrate there why this was required. This is also the committee that would visit sites in order to go and see for themselves, for instance, challenges being experienced by a project that may in fact perhaps be leading to delays, as has been experienced with one of the contracts in question, where the soil condition was one of the, and encountered along the execution of the project was one of the problems that required a change in the design solution in order to deal with the conditions that they found there. And then obviously in relation to staff and probity, there are things like declarations, as I've already mentioned, there are lifestyle audits, but there's also the process of checking your supplier database against the staff database and declarations made by staff to make sure that the company is not inadvertently doing business with its own staff, which you know, would then need to do that. So on the basis of all of these things, we have not been able to find information that corroborates the suggestions that are being and the innuendo that are being thrown about in relation to our own staff being involved in you know, in favoring this company unduly. And if we had found any information of that nature, for instance, to corroborate that innuendo, and I call it innuendo because that's not substantiated in any way, the article relies on an unnamed source. We cannot go to that source because we don't know who the source is and go and seek further information. So we can only deal with what's in front of us and what we know and what we're able to corroborate as fact. And therefore, as a board, we felt comfortable to deal with this matter through the CE as the accounting officer to give us answers. Otherwise, if we had something else on the table, it would have necessitated that the CE is compromised in some way or some of our managers are compromised in some way, and therefore we cannot rely on the information that they give us, and we would have followed a different approach. But we didn't, because we didn't have information to the contrary. So, Chairperson, if you allow me now, I just want to just talk through these slides that are, and I want to believe that everybody has a copy of the presentation in front of them. You know, one of the things that obviously, first of all, needed to be checked was, in awarding these contracts, did we comply with legislation? Did we comply with Rand Water's own procurement policy? Yes, I think if it's possible to to bring it that will be helpful. But in the interest of time, maybe I just continue speaking, Chairperson, even as they set it up technically. So those were then the first things that we required the CE to demonstrate to us, that the PSMA rules weren't broken in any way, that the CIDB guidelines in terms of who is qualified to do what size or level of complexity of work wasn't compromised in any way, and that Randwater's own supply chain management was also followed. If you look at legislation in the slide number 3, one of the allegations being made by City Press is that there were advance payment in contravention of the PSMA. I'll return to that just now, but there is that snapshot of the relevant section of the PSMA that I'd like to just draw the members' attention to the fact that they are quoting the PSMA in an incomplete fashion. So, for instance, when you don't quote the whole section, you leave out something that may, in fact, allow something. So if you look at 31.1.2, and particularly draw the committee's attention to C, it says that for the purposes of this regulation, sound cash management includes avoiding payments for goods or services or payments in advance of receipt of goods or services, unless required by the contractual arrangements of the supplier. The suggestion, I think, with the City Press article is that payment was made for no value and for no benefit and for no goods or service received, and we would want to demonstrate that, in fact, the payments made could be seen as having been allowed in terms of 31.1.2c, but also that they were made as progress payments in relation to the contract, but they were made for some benefit or value, not just to willy-nilly. And then the second piece of legislation is the CIDB Act and Chapter 3, which really sets out the rationale for why this grading system of this and the CIDB itself has been set up. This allows, for performance record of contractors to be tracked, and for a system that then guides entities as to what level of work can be given to what level of grading of a company. And we would want to demonstrate later on that in all instances, the company called Fastin was awarded contracts as per the CIDB regulation. So the suggestion that they were awarded work that they were not qualified to do would be incorrect, because this is the guideline that we follow. And then as regards Randwater's own policy, the suggestion around the awards, again, is the fact that Randwater didn't always award to the cheapest contractor. Right. And then the first thing we would want to indicate is that for some of these contracts, Randwater was not operating within the well-known adjudicating basis of 80-20 and 90-10, but enjoyed a exemption from National Treasury and applied the 40-30-30 rule, with 40 being price, 30 being BE, and 30 being for quality. Criteria has since fallen away, but some of these contracts were awarded under that, which would then also explain the outcome. But secondly, the other thing to say about the cheapest option is that we don't always follow, we're not just driven by price, we also look at the commercial evaluation. But secondly, there have been many experiences in the public sector where, in the desperation to get work, contractors can also undercut themselves and try and come in at a level that they then are unable later on to complete the work. And that is a risk that we also try and manage. And in fact, within Randwater, there is a system where when the specifications are worked out and before we go out on tender, our own internal quantity surveyors look at the project and set a guide price so that we have an idea, a scientifically driven idea, if you like, of how much a project is going to cost, so that we don't just rely on the people responding to our tender to tell us how much the work is going to cost. This then gives us an ability when we evaluate to know when someone is sitting too far outside the bounds of our own evaluation in terms of being too high or too low. Too high means you're not giving us a fair deal and value for money, and too low might mean you don't know what you're doing, or might mean you're undercutting in order to get the project, but we risk the possibility of you being unable to successfully complete the project. So that is one of the things that we do use in relation to that. And then in the next slide, we deal with the contracts awarded by Rand Water, and want to indicate that our own policies are reviewed regularly in order to make sure that they are aligned to changing treasury guidelines and legislation, but also to ensure that we improve our own systems to ensure that we continue to award work in a fair and transparent manner. One of the things that we're doing at the moment is that we're moving to an e-tendering platform, which we believe is going to improve even further on the transparency question and on the controls, because access into that platform will be as authorized, and it will be easy to track, and the audit trail will be even much more easier to follow than a paper-based system. So that's how seriously we take the fact of ensuring that our controls are robust, that we have continuous improvement all the time. And the point is, where you deal with human beings, if you don't check your systems all the time, if you don't improve all your systems all the time, then what may have been sound controls at some point starts becoming loopholes or risks in the future. In relation to the City Press article, again at slide 7, we just highlighting some of the major issues that might have been then the issues that have also attracted the attention of the committee in relation to the advance payment for $56 million, not performing on its contractual obligation, the company, that the company is owned by a Zimbabwean-born businessman, that the company was appointed to 4 mega projects, and I'd like to deal with each one in turn. In the next slide, we deal with the issue, which I think was also the headline, about this company being awarded $1.1 billion worth of projects. And want to mention the fact that these are multiple projects awarded over a 5-year period. And to us as a board, this is also something that would not be unusual within the space that we operate and would not be unique to Fastmove. There are other companies that do business within the space that get repeat work from Rand Water. And this has been so for a long time. And this is also partly because this is a specialized space. Companies that operate within the space, this space would get repeat contracts from different entities within the sector. And so that's the first thing to say about that. And then in the next slide, we just outline the different projects stretching from 2011 to the latest award being in 2016. And then we also state the value of the project. And just as a... And then in the next slide, we're making the point about this not being out of the ordinary, and we list just a couple of other companies that are maybe more well-known and maybe don't raise their eyebrow because they are well-known, like Stefanuti, Group 5, and Hall Longmore, who have also received multiple projects over the similar period of time, in the same space of time, in fact. And then in the next slide, we list some of those projects being awarded to different companies. Also, the values of those projects. That's as a comparison to show that the awards being where Fastmove was contracted do not necessarily sit outside of the real realm of the way in which we do business and the size of the projects that we do. And then in relation to the 56 million that was awarded in advance for work that had not been completed, we would like to indicate, for instance, that the payments were made as per the contractual terms, which we'll outline in the next slide or so, and that the payments are also made and linked to guarantees being extracted from the company, also in terms of the project, in order to safeguard against the risk of the work not being completed. But the contract terms are such that the payments are made as per particular milestones having been achieved or particular materials having been delivered on site. And that we would want to submit that this is not an unusual or an irregular way of doing business, as it's in fact part of how the construction contracts are set up. But another thing that we as a board wanted to look at in relation to the payment of the contracts and also highlight and share with the committee is the fact that there is segregation of duties and a process before a payment certificate is processed and finally processed for payment by finance. Within the project management space, there would be an engineer on site, a rainwater engineer on site, who would have to sign off on the work having been done or on the materials having been delivered. And then it would go to a project manager who would also then check on the work of the project engineer. And then ultimately to a program manager who would check on the work done by the previous two. And for contracts of a particular size, the ultimate signing would then be the COO, who would also, after having certified himself, would sign off. It is only after that process that you would then go to finance, who then engage their own checks and balances before they actually process the payment. So we think that this is quite a sound system of checks and balances before a payment is made, which would have a effect, we think, of preventing an individual or someone within rainwater processing advance payment irregularly. But again, in relation to the contracts referred to here, we're talking about, if you look at slide 13, 31 progress payment that was made for the work at the Palmead pump station, and 25 million progress payment that was made on the B17 tender. And then in the next slide, we just deal with the what the payment for the 31 million was. And this was payment against the contract terms on delivery of a pump that was manufactured in Germany being delivered. So the contract terms, which were according to what is called a FIDIC contract, which is an international Federation of Consulting Engineers format of a contract that was entered into, that invokes a clause in relation to progress payment being made, especially for major acquisitions, which would, for instance, allow for the payment to be made on delivery of the pump and not necessarily on installation of the pump, as one can imagine the cost of the equipment that we're talking about. So we would then want to submit that project was paid that particular clause of the FIDIC contract that was entered into between Rainwater and Fastings, and that there is nothing irregular about it, and that the delivery of the pump would have been certified according to the process and the role players, as I've just previously outlined, as to who gets involved in certifying the fact that the material has indeed been received. And then the 25 million progress payment for the pipeline B17, this was not a FIDIC contract, this was a general conditions contract that is utilized in the construction sector, which also has a clause that provides for interim payments and the method for how these payments will be done according to particular milestones and deliveries of material and manufacture of, for instance, a pipe, where we might pay once the pipe is delivered on site or after the pipe has been manufactured as per proof that we go to the extent of going to the manufacturer to go and check that the pipe as designed, as specifically called for this particular project, have been ordered and have now been manufactured. But before they are released and brought on site, sometimes having been brought on site for safety reasons, for instance, because you don't want to keep all the material on site. And then after we've satisfied ourselves through those checks and balances, only then would that amount be paid that someone, you know, is interpreting as an advance payment in this instance. One of the things that might also have led to this interpretation of advance payment is the invoicing system that the company First Move themselves utilizes, where they call it an advance payment. You know, it's unfortunate that they use that word, but perhaps they term it that way because the pipes are not yet on the ground. The pipes are not yet installed. They've just been at that stage manufactured on our behalf and as per our specifications. So that would be the explanation for those two payments that were picked up and highlighted in the City Press article. And then the next issue that I would want to lift from that article that was also highlighted was the fact that this is a little known company. But if you look at the CIDB grading, this is a company that deserved work at a level 8 and a level 9 grading. The fact that it's not well known to everybody, I'm not sure how material that should be when we are giving contracts if the company is graded at the right level. And secondly, you know, we talk about emerging contractors and developing the industry and new entrants all the time. So that said, there will be, from time to time, companies that are known to not known generally or to whoever, that must be awarded work. But then also the issue that they lifted is the issue of the owner of the company being a little, or a Zimbabwean-born businessman. In this regard, I mean, we would want to submit that. We go through probity checks in terms of the companies we do business with, to the extent of wanting to know who are the owners, what are their ID numbers. And then for the company itself, the company must be registered. And it obviously must also, as a company to operate in South Africa, must be registered with SARS. It must be on the CIDB database. So in terms of our due diligence, the owner of this company has a South African identity in terms of our records. And, you know, we would want to say this is a South African registered company with a SARS certificate, a BEE certificate, and all the usual requirements that you would want from any entity before you do business with it. And according to the records and the information provided by the company itself when tendering for work, this is a 20-year-old South African company. So I'm not sure how else to, you know, what further to say in relation to the fact that he might be a Zimbabwean-born person. I'm not sure, and I at this point I can't say whether he's a naturalized South African or what the status is. But in terms of the probity checks that we have to do on a company before we do business with them, this company wouldn't be on our database if it didn't have all of these things. And this company wouldn't pass, for instance, an audit process if it didn't have all of these things. And as I highlighted right at the beginning, this company has, you know, some of the work awarded to it has been part of the scope of the external audit exercise. And then in terms of its profile, as you can see there, it has various accreditations or gradings from the CIDB, the last bullet point, HCEPE, being the one that would have been relevant to the nature of the contracts that were awarded by Randwater, with PE meaning that it's an emerging contractor that, even though it's currently graded at 8, is now seen as capable of doing work at level 9, which, as you can see, at the table below, the amount that can be awarded to a company that can work at a grading of 9 is unlimited. So we would want them to submit that within that framework, which is the guideline that we have, this company has qualified for the contract that they were awarded. And then in relation to the suggestion that the company didn't perform well and yet it did, it got repeat awards from Randwater, we will deal with later on with the causes of the delay. And we would want to say, in relation to where the causes of the delay in completion of the work, it's something that is not within the control of the company. We don't think it would be fair or that it would stand muster to then punish that company for things that were within their or outside of their scope of control. But also we have a system where at the completion of a contract there is an evaluation that Randwater does on the performance of a company, and that would pick up if there are problems in relation to that contractor, and has in other instances led to a contractor being blacklisted from getting work from Randwater. We would also look at our own database in terms of the blacklisting, but we also look at National Treasury blacklisting of companies before we award new contracts. So there was nothing that then could have been picked up, or should have been picked up, that should have led to this company not getting additional work, after the first contract. On slide 16, it's just further explanation about the owner of the company and the ownership. And as I said, company established in 1996. That has been in existence for 20 years, and it describes itself as 100% black-owned by a South African. And as we said, in terms of the paper was submitted, the individual submitted a South African ID. And then in the next slide, then, multiple contracts awarded by Randwater. One of the things that we want to illustrate is the fact that some of these projects, like the Palmeet pumping station or the Zekerbosch Station 5 project, are actually quite huge projects. And the work is awarded not to one contractor, but to multiple contractors to do different stages or to share in the work. But it is also divided in a multidisciplinary fashion. So each one would do a segment of the work as per their own expertise and their own qualification to do that work. So if you look at the next slide, the Palmeet pumping station, for instance, the work is divided in the way that is outlined there, with Bufethi project getting a slice of the work, ACM JV getting another portion of the work, a company called TTA, and then Fasten getting another segment of the work. And then the next slide illustrates with Zekerbosch Station 5A, all the contractors in the last column there that have been granted work, as well as the values that have been granted and the dates when those contracts were awarded. So this is just by way of illustrating to the committee that perhaps there's a slight suggestion, Chairperson, that maybe this company is favored to do all the work or to do significant amount of work at Randwater, and we would just want to demonstrate how the work is divided and the fact that we do try and rotate and spread the work amongst different entities. And then at slide 22, we just go a little bit into the delays in relation to pipeline L17, which is another one that was mentioned as suggesting that perhaps this company is the one that caused the delays, or perhaps that Randwater didn't manage the contract very well or their performance very well. And we would want to outline some of the reasons for the delay. If you look at the first row there, in the comment section, and we also give the costs that delay occasioned. You will see that there was a 12-month delay due to the delay in issuance of a water use license by DWS. And then if you look at the second column, the second row, you will see that there was change in specifications on the pipe in order to respond to the conditions of the, as encountered during implementation of the project, as well as the last one, which was the concrete reinforcement, which was again a design solution that had to be found when the pipeline was being laid in order to respond to the fact that when the digging started, the soil conditions were found to be those of a wetland, and that it would be difficult to just lay the pipe as is, and therefore a solution was needed. And this happens from time to time. I think one of the engagements we had with the CE, one of our questions was, to what extent are we sure that we're doing the best that we can in order to anticipate as much as is humanly possible to anticipate before the work starts in order to avoid these types of contracts. For instance, in terms of drilling in order to look at the soil conditions, you can't drill the whole way of the pipeline, for instance, where you have long, a huge area in terms of hectares or kilometers in terms of where the pipeline is going to go. So you take samples at intervals. But is one thing that has been looked at by management in terms of whether maybe the frequency of those intervals should be increased. And then you hit a snag where perhaps you have to do blasting because you missed a portion where blasting would be required and you didn't take that into account. Or perhaps you have to redesign the direction of the pipe in order to circumvent something. And then you need to deal with new land use permission because instead of digging in land that is owned by X, you now have to go and look for a servitude in land that is now owned by Y. Those kind of issues do arise from time to time. And with planning and improvements, we're trying all the time to just try and see what else can be done to improve those processes in order to avoid or shorten some of those kind of delays. But when something like that happens, Chairperson, it then becomes impossible to then penalize the company for something like that because then they have to wait on rainwater to give direction in terms of the appropriate design solution or rainwater in terms of getting the now required environmental permissions or land use permissions and so on and so forth. And so that's just by way of explaining, for instance, in relation to the pipeline L17, what would have occasioned the delays. And then the next one is in relation to the Palmit pumping station, where the contractor has asked for extension of time and Randwater has granted them extension of time. And penalties are under review and penalties will be applicable in that instance. But penalties are not always applicable just because you have a delay. It's always the cost of the delay that is important, Chairperson, in order to determine whether you need to apply penalties or not. And just the last few slides, maybe I won't speak to in relation to the project management capacity. I want to deal with the second issue, Chairperson, giving me signs to wrap up. But the slides 24 and 25 speaks to some of our processes, and then 26 and 27 is some photographic evidence of the specific projects that have been referred to. One of them, it was said that the work hasn't been started, and the photographic evidence clearly demonstrates that the work has been started. That then, Chairperson, would conclude the presentation in relation to responding to the matters raised by City Press. The second issue that was raised is in relation to the audit preparation for 2016-17 and how we're working with the AG in relation to that. The couple of slides, about three slides, that speaks to what has happened thus far. Yes, the AG gave us notification that they will be taking over the audit of Rand Water. We have been in engagement with them.
That shall be for bedtime read.
Yeah, that shall be. I think it would be clear enough that we are cooperating with the AG and waiting for certain information from them as well in terms of their engagement letter and their pricing and things like that.
Thanks for that, chairperson of the board. What we're wanting to do here is to safeguard the taxpayers' money. At the same time, what we also want to do is enforcement of transformation. Those two. We are indeed guided by specific regulations and legislation. One of those is your PMFA and also, the media is very, it's a very interesting type of animal. I remember, so much being said about the little known, what's little known, minister of finance, referring to Desmond Van Rooyen, and the media would have been attending all the meetings of finance committee, and knowing very, very well, what his contributions have been. But for some reason, suddenly, little known. I guess that's how they would really wish to, belittle. I'm sure there's another better English word that you can use. A company also little known, precisely because, for whatever reason, it gets to be a concern. To some of us who are part of the media here, it gets to be a concern as to how black companies are really ravished. That's the essence. I don't know this company. I don't even know their owner. But as a matter of principle, you get to be literally wished away, It's a little known, let's get to deal with, the known ones, and the known ones are known. Group 5, Marin Roberts, Brother Reed, you name them, But anything outside of those, it's going to be, a little known. It's a concern, I must say. As to at what stage are you then going to see some of these companies thriving in their own right? Which is what we really wish to do. We want to de-racialize our economy. We want to de-racialize our economy so that those big ones they get transformed. They find themselves in situations where ownership is transformed, apart from management, which is another case. So that we really stop, at some point in history, finding, white companies that are big and black companies that are forever going to be small. I just thought, let me just make those comments. I wouldn't be shocked, and usually what you do have in the media are your darlings of the media, which happen to be established and big players, which is very unfortunate. Anything else is to be wished away. Unfortunately, we get to that point, where it has to be black and white, which is very unfortunate. We're striving by all means to really make sure that we de-racialize our society, we de-racialize our economy, we de-racialize in our cultures, we de-racialize everything. That's what we should really strive for, all of us in society, here and outside of here. At the end of the day, we have to strive towards a society where there shall be no black or white. That's what Oliver Tambo would have said at some point. South Africa where there shall be no black or white, where there shall be South Africans. So that's what we're really striving for. But as we speak now, we have a backlog that we need to catch up on. We need to assist each other in really catching up on that backlog, redress the imbalances, and be able to say to ourselves at the end of the day, we are indeed making headways. We are indeed moving forward. We are indeed striving to be that non-racial and non-sexist South Africa. Let me just make those few commentaries. If any issues the members shall have to pick up, I would imagine some of the technical issues in the course of any questions and comments shall have to be addressed by some of the technical team that includes your CEO, your COO, your CFO, your director in the DG's office, and the DG, and so on and so forth. Okay, members, if there are any issues, Mam Kaula, you noted. So far, Mr. Chok.
The bank is calling. The bill is about the abacona lapa economics. And then also, your tata is relatively a family and a quite a book, but I don't know it. And the bank will left this salo. No longer born, one. Ukuthi unayo lento ukuthi unentshisekelo ukuthi ubone izinto nombone lelizwe lingaphili ngalendlela ephila ngayo. Ngizobuza lana ke ngemvume yakho sihlalo ngila kwa City Press. Umbuzo wami la ku City Press umbuzo ukuthi ngempela lento mangabe bengakwazi ukusivezela ukuthi bayithole phi kanjani, thina izosiza kuphi ngoba inhloso yabo mangibheka nabo kusho ukuthi into abayitholile kodwa ukuze nathi sikwazi ukuyibona sibone nathi silekelela kanjani kule nkinga abakhala ngazo. Ngibona sengathi basivezela inyoka bengasivezeli umzimba wayo wonke kukusidelela ngamanye amazwi ngoba thina siyathanda kusebenzisana namaphepha kodwa malizosho into ebambekayo ukuze sikwazi nathi ukubona okay nakho lapha okunenkinga khona ahanje kulungise khona kuvalwe ukuze siye phambili. Owesibili umbuzo uthi-ke lana kule nto yokuqasha-ke nina yini-ke eniyenzayo ukuthi nibheke laba abanele inkinga yokuthi baqashe abantu ababiza imali ebizayo, ababiza kakhulu. Lokhu kukhombisa ukuthi eqinisweni bona it's not about ukuthi bafuna ukusebenza basiza abantu, bona bafuna inzuzo yabo enkulu. Uyayizwa loo nto. Nina-ke nithini ngalabo bantu still niyaqhubeka nibanikeza umsebenzi noma nenze njani babuyisele eceleni. Owesithathu ngila kwasi-IDB lana enikhuluma khona ngobukhwalithi bomuntu ukuthi lo muntu urejistile and ufanele kwenza lo msebenzi. Niqinisekisa kanjani? Hayi ngishiso yini na? Ngishiso ukuthi le nto khona ukuthi uthole ukuthi umuntu une-driver's license uzomnikeza imoto yakho ukuthi mihambe uyodriva. Awumazi lo muntu ukuthi ngempela uyakwazi ukudriva. Like before, umasipala bethi uma kuqashe eThekwini uthi une-driver's license, akunikeze maybe u-3 months ekufaka layo kulokuthiwa nje no test ukubona ngempela ukuthi uyakwazi ukudrive. Nina ke nenze njani ukwenza sure ukuthi lo muntu masinika lo msebenzi uzowenza, mayeza uzowenza ngalendlela esidinga ngayo. Okwesibili, lokhu kwabantu laba abenza umsebenzi, angithi khona lento ethi umuntu mayanikeza umsebenzi uyayakalela isikhathi ukuthi how many years or how many months abanyanga ngengaka. Nikuqikelela kanjani ukubona ubukhwalithi balo msebenzi awenzayo, noma uyaxhamazela because ngoba ujahe ukuthi ashaye lesa sikolo ukuze akwazi ukuyogreta leya mali ayibekelwe na. Okokugcina-ke lana ngane zami, kukhona la sihlezi sikhala khona, la ngifika ngo 2014 la esengisemuva 2014 ngakhala ngezokhuzana ngesuwa pipe eyenziwa e-Ward 54 yashiwa phakathi, kodwa imali yenze njani? Yahamba. Abanye abanawo ama-house connection. Lalela-ke, lana eGoli, kune-bridge. Ngithi seGoli lapha kuleya ndawo, uzophinde ngiyiphinde ngiyilandele futhi. SeGoli lela bridge kuney'ngane wela umfula. Lenziwe lela bridge inkampani ethize, nayo naniyigrante noma yayigrantwe lo msebenzi because ngoba yayinazo lezi ncwadi ezishothi iyawazi umsebenzi. Lawenza lelo bridge lasala phakathi. Kuyimanje njengoba ngikhuluma nawe, abantu bayacaca bawela kabuhlungu emfuleni, mabita ingane zesikole ziyangaphesheya, nabantu abadala babewelela ngaphesheya. Okubuhlungu-ke kuyimanje kunemntwana oshonile otholakale ewela, kanjalo uyibona iy'ngane ey'ncane ziwela ziyakhona. Kuleyo nkinga enjalo batabami, nibheka kanjani? Niyabanika abantu umsebenzi ngoba nibona iy'cucu zabo, niyabalandela ukubabheka ukuthi lo msebenzi bayawenza, bawenza ngendlela e-right na? La kulena-ke i-ID yokuba umuntu wala e-South Africa. Angikhulumi ngo-black and white, ngikhuluma ngomuntu wase-South Africa. Iy'nkampani eziningi esinenkinga lezi esikhala ngazo ziyafrantisa, zithathe inkampani ifrantise umuntu wala, wena ucabanga ukuthi umuntu wala, kanti eyawulo muntu lo ongayena wala. Uzothi mase kwenzeka iy'nkinga enje awusakwazi ukuthi uzomthola kuphi, akanendaba because akulona izwe lakhe. Nikuqinisekisa kanjani konke lokhu ukubheka ukuthi laba bantu, lo muntu lo, le contract, la bantu bangabakhona lana na? Inhloso yethu njengoba sila, ayikho into ebuhlungu ukubona abantu bakithi, silo sithi thina la siyalwa, silwela abantu bakithi, kodwa ubona abantu bakithi lezi nto funa bayithola bayitholi. Ngoba lana labantu baya ney'khondla khondla zetifiketi ey'nkulu ezithembekile, athi uma ingena nje uthi ayi wena njengosihlalo nje wale bhodi uthi cha hayi lona impela kuyamvumela, kanti ubhizi kanti uzokushaya ngani ngendlela etsheni. Le nto angimnika yona into eyibhomu. Ngoba iy'nkinga eziningi sinazo through abantu abaphethe izinto abafrantisiwe. Ngiyabonga.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to everyone present in the committee. And thanks, Chairperson, for pursuing change, for showing that you are pursuing change in this country. Firstly, I would like to know as to where does City Press get this information, and how is it going to help us as the committee if they don't reveal their sources? It appears and it's just as an insult to us. Secondly, concerning the appointment of these expensive contractors, what is your view about it? Because it gives a picture of spending exorbitant amounts for no good reason. And you also spoke about this CIDP Act. How do you verify the quality or the authenticity of the work that is done by these contractors? If I can quote the contractors that don't produce good work, they usually don't finish the work given to them. They produce bad work, they hastily do the work haphazardly so that they get paid quickly. For instance, there is a bridge in Johannesburg where the service provider did not finish constructing it, but kids and the community get killed because they have to walk on stones that were just left in the water there. Even if there is flood, they are supposed to walk on those stones. And my question is, how did the service provider of such nature get the tender to build this bridge? Concerning the identification of these contractors, we still see that funding is still being practiced in South Africa. How do you verify these contractors that are really, whether they are really South Africans with falsified information? How do you deal with it? I have just translated what the honourable member has written down before. Thank you.
Samguna?
Thank you, Chairperson. Morning, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen. Morning, Chairperson of the Board. I've been struggling to look at you when you were speaking there. That's why my neck is so sore, Chairperson. Very sore.
Never mind. You shall be getting a massage very soon.
Thank you very much. Then what I will be paying for that. thank you very much, Chairperson. You know, Chairperson, on your opening remarks before you gave us the time for our engagement, you made mention of what being careful about the media. You know, I read Malcolm X's books, one of his quotations. I like that quotation. He said, you know what? You must be careful of the media because you may find yourself fighting against the poor because of what they are saying and fighting for the rich. So when you read the media, you must be very, very careful. You must be very selective. But nevertheless, there are things that they raise for us to get deeper as committees or as oversight committees. They raise this thing, even if they did not raise it, the truth of it. So we get into it and we find some. If we don't find something, you who's being accused, you must also check yourself. Am I doing fine? Did I do better? Then if you were in a crooked way, you didn't come online. They just become guard dogs sometimes. On the newspaper, they raise this. I so wish that, Chairperson, you may just give clarity. Because when they come with these accusations, they cannot be just wished away. You have to come with the responses that are convincing to the majority of the people there. Because this thing is easily translated, you know, anything that comes, now it comes to the ruling party. When water does its own things the other way, they say the ruling party is doing that. So we have to check that. Let's ask this question. They say, because we called you on the article here, you were given 490 million. To do a design and engine room in Zekerbosch station, where you are supposed to finish this thing in 2018. But according to them, they say up to today, there's no one on site. You see, it's specific. They continue on the same article. They say
There was a budget of 151 million for electrical, something, electrical motors, whatever that may be, and Mayor Star, which you were supposed, or through that company, to be completed 21 months ago. That's the article that said it. It's not me. 21 months ago. But as they are publishing that article, they say 143 million has already been spent and the work has not yet been completed, which was supposed to be completed 21 months ago. And you still need an addition of 100 million rand all the same. You think the chairperson said you must protect the public money? We must ask about, we still need more 100 million on the same thing. Now, all that 100 million is, where is the work for 371 million that had to be completed in 2014, and you still need 100 million more. I think I'm correcting myself for that one. Then, on the issue of work not delayed due to Rand Waters' permission, how long do you take, Rand Waters, Shepherdson, how long do you take as Rand Waters now to assess and give permission to the contractor to finish its work? Because you say that it's not their fault, it's your fault. In that instance of being on fault, you are delaying them to finish on. What is happening? Are they continuing to work somewhere and getting paid? Because they cannot stop wait for you. It's business. They are in business, these people. What do you do? You have given us on page the legislation, I think it's written number one, the PFMA section 31.1.2C. Number C, the avoiding prepayment for goods or services. Those clauses, are they there on the contract? When you sign the contract with the contractor, do you have those fine lines which indicate that we are going to be giving you contracts? And on which basis are you going to be giving them those advance payments? And as a board, do you monitor those things? Do you monitor those contracts? Because as a board, we have got the biggest role of doing an oversight over what the administration is doing. And then, You have tried to explain this advance payment. What is an advance payment? Because you said, according to you, it's not what it seems to be. But according to the still receipts, it's return advance payment, but that's not the thing. How do you explain that to Auditor General? Because the Auditor General, if you're saying now they have come to you, you are going to be audited by them. So then they don't take stories. They don't take stories. That is, these people, when they work, these stories, they are not going to be listening. It's a story. Storytelling, that's why. You see, how are we going to explain that? Oh, no, by this we meant that, and in that we meant that. You see, it's even confusing even to ourselves in the house. How are you going to, is there any possibility you can do an oversight check to do the proper thing? And lastly, Chairperson, hey, we saw some photos, man. You know, on Monday when I flew from Johannesburg to here, I got to a toilet there. I saw a tap lapare from my mind. I ran to close it. It was not my duty to close, to close that tap. I closed it. I tried to close it. You understand? To show that, hey, I'm concerned. I'm working underwater. there has been water, a pipe burst in Kanyamazane, next to my constituents. And it looks like it's a pipe that transported a bulk of water, do you understand? And you see, they're just erupting, you see. Is there any possibility that one of you find out what is happening? If somebody, the honorable member is reporting just now, because we cannot afford to lose a drop of water. What more about the liters and whatever kilometers, what kiloliters, whatever, I don't know, megaliters of water that we're going to lose just by the best of that pipe. Yeah, regardless of saying, yeah, it's a responsibility of municipality, we deal with water that is being lost. The issue of the things, well, you know, when you say it's a fruitless expenditure, we'll be fixing that. Hey, we can start try and defend. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much. I'm happy now that I can see the Chairperson. She's moving this side. Thank you very much.
And I understand why you are happy, because you're seeing a beautiful face there.
That's correct, Chairperson.
And I must also mention, members, that as members of this committee, among other roles that we play is to be an ambassador of saving of water. So it is our duty to save that water, because as we speak all the time, we speak to society out there, to save water, we shall be the first one to be that example. Mr. Chaga?
Chairperson, can I ask just on sacred bulls? I agree totally with you. I've got no problem awarding tenders to any company that could do the job. I just want to ask, we yet to protect. I want to ask on the engine room, if you look at the article, it says, and if we look at your date, starting date is June 2015, for this engine room at Sakerbos at a cost of 423,000, although here it mentions 490 million. There's a zero missing here on your documentation, so I presume it's 423 million, the contract value. But if I look at the, on page 27, the station, engine room A5, there's groundwork done. How much money has been paid out on this project so far? Actually, I just want to deal with the one question, so I just can get clarification on this. I want to know how much money has been paid out on this contract. According to you, the contract started in June 2015, and I presume this photo you've taken now, because you present this to us now, there's no building yet. It's then more than a year later, and how much has been spent on that project so far?
No,
thank you very much, Chair. I think the presentation has been a sound presentation, even if it does not go into the details of what has been reported in the article, Chair. But I think what is very important, Chair, is that media will always play that oversight role too. Between ourselves and the party, and I think it needs to be appreciated very much that the media has in fact brought this thing to the attention of the public, that led to the committee having to invite Rand Water to appear before it today. Now, Chair, the questions that were asked by the media, which were responded to, in the final report of the media, they did not take into account the response of Rand Water, as it is reported by the Chair. It will therefore be important that we must be finished with those questions, to look at what has been responded to, what were the questions, and how Rand Water responded. so that we are able to balance the article and what Rainwater has responded on. Because if you're going to leave it like that, the statement made by the chair of the board is that it's unfair reporting because they have, in fact, given their side of the story, and the journalist, in fact, decided to go its own way. Now, obvious, the question of revealing the sources is not our domain, and we'll not want to get into that. I think this committee must be clear that whatever that, whoever is the whistleblower, in the quest for justice chair, we will not even ourselves want to call the person to appear here and explain. But it is very clear, Chair, that this is more of an inside issue. It does not come from outside. So it means that there may be issues there that need to be attended to by the board itself, rather than just saying that things are fine, everything is okay. Maybe it's sort of calling for some kind of introspection that the board must do, and I want to encourage you to do that, because it will definitely help you if we were to take this article very seriously. There will be more articles that will keep on coming, and I think it's important that you sort of take it in that way. Secondly, Chen, the issue of the tender awarded, there are quite a number of them. What will be important for the committee, Chair, again, will be maybe to share information, not now. In a time as you, when you go back, try and respond to each one of them, the process that was followed. You know, this was a tender issued on this day. So many, companies applied, adjudication happened, and this company was then appointed. You know, submit that maybe within 14 days, if in your closing chair, you'll have to move that part. So that, you have sort of really accounted on the screen, you not just rush over. This whole thing. The issue of a failure to meet the deadlines and all of that, Chair, if you were to look at in the past, here in Cape Town, there's a highway built by the then apartheid government. It does not meet that highway. It's just here next to the ICC. The other portion of the highway is facing the left, the other one is facing the right. They don't meet. Another contractor was building from the back, the other one was coming from the front. They missed to connect each other, you know, and there was never a check balabalu during the time of the regime of the apartheid regime. But I'm not saying that we want to compare ourselves to that. We must do the best, because we are the best, by the way. The work that we do in supporting and changing the lives of our people is noted. So therefore, we cannot be doing this shared work not on the side of Rainwater. So the call that I'm making, Chair, is that this thing does not end here with this input made by the Chair and the Board, which we appreciate, I think. But go deeper, give us further information, take your time. When we deal with the report early January, Chair, the Rainwater will be submitting the annual report. Maybe in that you can then give us further details of what happened and what is it that we have done around whatever that we have identified with this is. But issues of policy become very significant. Procurement policies become key, and the issue that is raised by Honorable Nguni. We have made this call as a committee, Chair, that the Auditor General should begin to audit the entities, meaning that you are implementing agencies, so that everything is done in line proper with PFMA. And if that's then going to be looked at, it's definitely going to help the department to watch call the Rainwater to be able to sort of put in place proper systems and all of that. I would not want to deal much, Chair, with the issue of the refugee, the Zimbabwean. I have that home affairs background again. I would not want to deal with that much. Just to emphasize on the point that you raised, Chair, that what is very important is to, all our black emerging companies We have to give them support, all the necessary support that they need. But they must not break the law. And we must not help them to break the law. Or we must not break the law ourselves and use black companies. Because we'll be killing them if we do that. So the point that I'm making is that, Chair, let's give our people support. Let them come to the mainstream of business. I don't know who is the chairman of Group 5. But I now know who is the chairman of the little unknown company called First Move. I now know. And maybe at some point we'll invite that person to celebrate with him the achievement that he has achieved in providing service to our people and being an African person and giving him support. I think that's an attitude that we must take. But I'm simply saying that let us never underestimate what has been raised as a concern or as a point that the media says that there's a problem here. We must never run away and then say, because we are black, therefore media is unfair to us, We need to engage. You need, in fact, from here again, to continue engaging with the media. You must engage with them, because it may not end here. They may still come back to you tomorrow, but I think that not only that, even the journalists that wrote the story, because these are investigative journalists, let's engage them. They will help us, in fact, to know things that we did not even know. I'm not saying that we're going to invite them in the committee, but if need be at some point, we can. Nothing stops us. If we're to do investigation on this matter, we may at some point want to invite them to help us. We have done it somewhere in the part of the world where we're doing oversight and all of that. But nonetheless, Chair, those are my points. For now, I'm just going very general, but just to encourage you to further do that introspection so that we can then really find ourselves somewhere where we are sort of missing the point. Thank you, Chair.
I tell you, those are a few questions and comments from members. Maybe just a clarity that must be given by Renwater about policy of government on a project having been costed, and imagining here that your engineers shall have gone through a process of a project plan and anticipated any developments that could otherwise ensue. You did mention something to the effect of a project having been costed at $31 million 2 years down the line. It would have costed you 10 more million rands. You're citing examples of delays and cost escalations, and I would imagine inflation also being factored as another variable. There could be a few other variables in the equation, but what is the policy? We've been asking this question to a point where you were pointed to the direction of the National Treasury. In fact, I think we should actually have one session here where the National Treasury is also with us. just to clarify ourselves on policy frameworks when it comes to, this is a case in point of Glen William Dam. At some point being costed at, 2 billion rand, later to be now, standing at 4 billion rand, if I'm not mistaken. And again, policy imperatives come in there, wherein you're going to receive all sorts of explanations justifying, those cost escalations. We must be guided somehow to a point where if there is any such a policy with the National Treasury, we have sight of that policy. I have been asking for it. Now, it concerns me so that in future we don't go through. Remember, we have mentioned here that among other responsibilities that we have is to guard the taxpayers' money so that it does not find itself being abused, as it were. That is what we also are here for. If you can comment on that.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the members for the question. I'm just going to deal with the more general questions, and I'm going to ask the CE and the COO to deal with the project-related questions. We welcome the suggestion for introspection, Chairperson. And I think what maybe I didn't also make clear at the beginning is that as a board, when we discussed this matter with the CE on the 11th of November, we didn't, that was not the end of the discussion. We received the answers, as I indicated, that have informed the presentation and that allayed some of our initial fears and worries about what this is about. But we also asked the CE to review the process. So we as a board as well are wanting to do to receive information that looks at the critical path that these projects have followed, right from adjudication and award to contract management and performance management, so that we ourselves can identify whether there's any improvements and lessons that can be learned from how these projects. So we're not leaving it, we're not taking it lightly and just saying there's nothing there and that's the end of the issue. And yes, we do understand the issue about an unnamed media source and the fact that that can be revealed. So that then also, however, makes it very difficult for us to take it further. It would have been very helpful if our own whistleblowing processes could have been triggered as well, because that then could. But we'll reflect on that. A member mentioned that it must be coming from inside or so on. We'll reflect on that in terms of whether there's any way that the board could help solicit and give an indication that coming to the board is a safe space to come and whistleblow if you think you are, in addition to the anonymous tip lines that we have and other processes. So we do take that under advisement and appreciate the comments that the committee has made. I think I'll let the CE and the COO deal with the other questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson and members. Perhaps I'll try and direct questions as they came as well, Chair, and the ones that I'm not covering, I think the COO will deal with them. Mem Kaula actually raised a question on our reliance on CIDB grading, to say how are we sure about the quality of the work done on the basis of that. Sometimes it's one of those issues where under normal circumstances, contractors themselves don't just come out and they are an 8 or a 9 in terms of the rating. They need to start from 1 and then they move up. So as they do that, they create a timeline that is actually independently assessed. That's why the CIDB grading comes out the way it does, because it's also on the size of the work that they've done now. We're talking about a company that has a 20-year lifespan, but the question then becomes, there would be instances where they were not working with us, but by law, in terms of what we regard in South Africa is, if we have that independent assessment and it puts them at that level, it means legitimately they can operate at that level. And I'm just saying this from a point of view of where we have never done work with any particular company that is rated at a particular level. But once they start working with us, that changes the picture. Because what we do is, at the end of the project, we have something called, I'll use Renota language, Form 8, which is a post-analysis of the project. What happens is, for every project as we have them, we have what, as the chairperson was referring to, a site engineer whose job is to actually monitor the progress of the project from start to finish. Because what needs to be appreciated, Chair, is our infrastructure is underground. primarily we have maybe around 3,500 kilometers of line underground. So which means you don't see your infrastructure, you don't see its condition. You have to rely on scientific methodology in terms of deciding how well is it underground. Certain cases, it's actually rotten because of the soil conditions. In certain, you can have a 50-year-old pipeline that still operates and have one that you put 10 years ago and then there's a pipe burst. So I'm just wanting to everybody to understand the complexity of the business that we run. But having said that, as new projects have been done, we have a site engineer that sits there. And hence, it also answers the issue of progress payments, because up to every stage, and this is contractually linked, to say you've done work up to so far, let's go and check as you submit your invoice to see the work as you've done. If they encounter problems like with the soil conditions, having looked at the work that they are doing, then before any payment is done, there's that process as outlined by the chair in terms of determining that. But I'm just saying, even after the project has been finalized, then there's a matter of us now as a company doing a post-assessment, and those post-assessments then gets to be on our own database. What happens is for us to consider the very same contractor for future work, we also look at the assessments on the basis of the performance of that particular contractor, no matter whether they are classified in terms of CIDB at this level or that level, because now we have our own methodology in terms of assessing them. So I'm saying this to get to the point that was mentioned by Mem Kaula on how do we trust that a particular CIDB grading is something that can happen. And it also helps, and unfortunately, Chair, it's also the challenge. Once you have repeat business with somebody, you can actually determine whether they have the capacity to do that or not. But on the other side, if you have repeat business with them, then it's a matter of saying you're favoring certain contractors over others. So it's a catch-22 all the times that you have to balance it. The other issue I would want to touch on is the one on fronting. The issue of fronting is we have our own Department of Forensics. Part of what we do is any contractor that we deal with, we actually subject them, even before we give work to them, everybody on our database, and as we start doing business with people. And not only at that particular point in time, because the issue of ownership changes all the time. If we are to award a particular contract at all times, we follow that particular process for everybody that has responded to our tender to actually look at the company itself from a point of view of ownership and everything. And to some extent, we even go to the sites of these particular institutions where they would say, no, this is our address and whatever. We do have unplanned scheduled visit to actually see who's running the company and whether there's fronting or not, because the last thing we want is to actually report on particular figures to say, no, the BEE figures are like this, only to find that that's not the case because there's an issue of fronting. But it's one thing that we take very seriously, and that's how we deal with it. The one, Member Mguni, I can't answer where City Press got their information. And it's one of those where you have people that, even I think in terms of good journalism, if people come with information and they say this is what is happening, it's incumbent upon them to say based on this particular aspect or what. But within the outer space, there's a lot of aspects that I've never met before, but media also has their own sources. But I think it's been quite articulated by other committee members, the chair, from a point of view of saying, and even yourself when you said, even if there's no truth in something, it forces us to look at ourselves and see whether our process is robust enough to be able to clearly articulate or demonstrate that this is not what is happening. I mean, some of the other questions, I'll just jump into a different question that was asked. Seker Bosch pumping station, it's at one of our sites that is a national key point. I know I might be opening another can of worms, but as a national key point, it means there's no journalist that can just walk in there and say, I've looked at this and I know that the project has not started. It's within Seker Bosch itself, and getting into that, there's a particular process that is governed by a piece of legislation. And now when you get information that is not corroborated, or somebody that says we were on site, how they were on site, if this is within a national key point? Because that's where Sekerbosch, it is one of our most sensitive sites, and there's quite a rigorous process in terms of even entering into that particular space. But I'm just trying to show that it gets difficult to be able to defend or explain something as it's been put out there to say, this is our findings. Whether it's the pumping, the engine room, or that is part of the national key point. But I think on our side, I will also allow the COO to come here to answer Member Basson's question on how far are we. And I mean, engine rooms, Member Basson, they are also covered by the fact that it's more the engines in terms of what you buy, and I think we were talking about having gone to Germany and ordering those, because those are quite specific given the size of our operations as well. So the biggest part, even if the buildings are still being done, has been the money spent on those. But I think the COO will come in terms of the spending, because putting a building around the engine rooms, it's about the ability for us to actually pump water. So the majority of those costs will be related to the engines themselves, which would now be those pumps, those massive pumps that we need to actually utilize. The Member Choke, the issue of Kwanyamazan, we still have to look at it, because it should be understood that we are... Oh, it still comes from Member Nguni. I must apologize. It should be understood that we are a pilot as well in terms of the expansion of our area into other areas. I think the ministry is actually looking at this project from different ends. There are other water boards that would actually be looked at in terms of assimilation or forming new ones. Now, part of the biggest issue moving into Mpumalanga specifically is the ownership of the assets. On one side, there's a matter of saying Renota has moved into this space now. They need to be able to deal with these particular matters. But on record, there has not been, the department is not at a point where they've come and said, these are the assets, we've moved you into this space. In certain instances, we are operating on assets that do not belong to us. Now, you might find the pipe best, which is unfortunate for everybody, and we want to deal with that, might belong to the municipality, or it might even belong to the department. So at this stage, we are working with the department in terms of saying, we need to have these assets transferred to Rainwater so that we can put them in our books, we can do assessments, and we can be able to deal with those kind of issues when they come up. But at this stage, it's been one gray area, because it's taken the department a long time to get to that point. Even now, we're still waiting for their decision in terms of the transfer of assets. So one of the things that we need to look at is whose assets are those and how do we deal with it. But that has not stopped us as well, wherein even if they belong to the municipality and the municipality or the department, they would say, Renota, because you are there, you can actually assist us in actually sorting out the problem. But that would require a different contractual agreement. But we do respond to those. But what I'm saying is, on record, those are not our assets, especially in a lot of areas that we've moved into within the Mpumalanga space. So I just need to put that out there. I agree with Mr. Teacher again. I think the board, the chair has actually alluded to the fact that we will actually talk about the process that we follow per tender. But I think it's linked to the process as outlined by the chair in the first instance. I know I'm not touching on the issue of the 490 million that COO will actually engage on to explain the difference between the two. The Chair, the issue of the water use license, you're talking about the escalation from 31 million to 41 million. And in this case, as I've said, that most of our infrastructure is underground. Having awarded the tender to First Move, as they were working with this particular project, they actually came across a wetland. Now, when you get into a situation where you have a lot of water with a wetland, the conditions as set by the department in terms of your water use license, they will actually tell you what you need to do before they can actually give you the approval to do that. Now, part of that would be for them to do an assessment and say, we'll only give you this if you are able to do the following changes. So under normal circumstances, or in most cases, that would require a scope change from a point of view of what has happened. In this particular case, the conditions as set up also require that there's an escalation of 2.1 million and a contingency at 3.1 million. and moving the contract value to 36.2 million. Renault ultimately paid 41.6 million, including time-related charges for the delays, scope change due to pipe coating change, because under normal circumstances, we thought this is just a normal line where there's no water. We were going to coat the pipe with bitumen, but we had to change that to polyurethane because of the conditions that we found there with a number, with a lot of water that's there. So I agree with you, but also, Chair, I'm also putting a challenge across that. All of us talk about National Treasury as the they understand everything and every business. What we need to do as we engage with them as well is to understand the differences in terms of the different kinds of businesses. For now, to answer your question, what they have said as well is any scope variation, because they understand, especially in our kind of business, that you have a lot of scope variations given the fact that you don't know what's underground as you do your work. But everything where there's a scope change of 20 million, no matter the size of the project, we need to actually engage with them. But perhaps it's important for us, as you actually suggested, to look at that. But for us, we look at the reasons behind that in terms of what happens. And I mean, if the department says, yes, you are going through a wetland and these are our conditions, we need to satisfy those. And I think the chair went to an extent of saying, sometimes you need to deviate the line. Now, if you have a servitude line that says, this is how from A to B the pipeline network was going to go, if you now have to deviate it, it means you might need to go and renegotiate everything. And it still relates to the change in scope as well. And I know that there are quite a number of sensitive comments that are quite useful that we need to start looking at from a point of view of at what point do you now decide this scope change, you need to review the project, because at all times we have to balance two issues. On one side, it's a matter of saying this project is delayed, whether it's informal settlements on top of it, whether we found rock underground or whether there's wetlands, we need to make a call on whether are we continuing with the project or not. And the size of the project, I think, have been clearly demonstrated to the extent that if you are 2 cents into the project, do you now drop it? It's wasteful expenditure, and we have to come and explain again, and it's a big issue that the media takes. On the other side, it's a matter of saying, how do we push through, and the delay, how much of it is justifiable, and what can we do to deal with it? I'm just trying to give a bigger picture in terms of some of the questions that have been raised, but I think what we're taking as well is the fact that these are real issues that have been explained or asked by the committee, and the committee is right in terms of saying we need to be taken to task to be able to explain and make sure that taxpayers' money at all times is guaranteed from a point of view of how we do our work. I think at this stage, I'll ask the COO to talk about the costing, especially the questions that we did not answer.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. The project that has been referred to, it's rightfully so, the Zeker Bosch pump station, system 5A. The contract for Fast Move Electrical in this instance is 429 million. We run it out to 430. As has been reported in the presentation, the work has started. Although the contract was awarded in 2015, we only started working in 2016 because of the civil unrest in the area. As we were about to start, we experienced a whole host of riots in the area with regards to people demanding jobs, contractors, small contractors wanting to be subcontracted. Unfortunately, therefore, we couldn't start on time. We started only in June 2016, when the work was awarded in 2015. To date, the detailed designs have been completed. We are on site. We are close to finalizing the excavations. Essentially, most of the work, although it looks like a big sums of money, but all those pipes, our pumps runner, as the CE is indicating, will be imported, almost like supply and delivery. So the tender itself was a turnkey in the sense that they had to first complete the design and go on site. We're targeting December 2013 2018 to complete the work, and we are on course. We'll keep monitoring the project closely. If I may also try to answer the question Yamekaula around the CIDB. We not only look at CIDB when we do functional assessment. For each and every tender, each and every submission that comes our way, we do a technical evaluation as well. In the technical evaluation, we look at previous experience, we look at your capacity, we looked at the methodology, but more importantly, we do reference checks. We check the work that we have done for Renotaph before, what was the quality, but we also go beyond that to check how you have performed in other work. So if for example, we are building a bridge, what we will do, we will not ordinarily build a bridge. What we will do, we will go out and check that company in relation to the work that they have submitted, their performance in those respect. And if indeed they have not performed well, then they will not ordinarily get the job. To avoid the situation that that you don't necessarily base your awards on CIDB, you do have to do functionality, you do have to do technical evaluations, and certainly you have to do reference check to check if indeed they have performed well in those projects or similar projects before. What we also do before we award, we do what we call due diligence to deal with the issues of funding with our forensic investigators. We demand to interview the people who own the company. So in this instance, if you're fast move, you say you're municipal, go, you own the company, you get interviewed so that we don't front for anybody. If you have a chief executive, we want to see the chief executive, we want to see your offices, we want to see your machinery, so that we don't end up in a situation where we are awarding a contract on the basis that it's owned by a black person, only to find that black person is providing garden services, things like that. So we do go beyond just what is on the paper as we do our conduct due diligence. Thank you.
You know, as you talk about some of these these companies and the due diligence that you do, I would imagine at some point we will have to get to a point where we have such a hearing on your service providers, a very complex one, I would imagine, as to an approach, it really will be an issue. Because you really want to dig deeper into these issues. It is not for now. You're going to be, of course, the subject for the day is about a company that has since been said to be benefiting. How many of these mega projects? Four or five? Five. And whether you can say the same, and whether eyebrows will also be raised if you were to say the same thing, for instance, about Group 5. I do not know these other ones. Stefanotti, who owns it, Superway, who owns, I don't know who owns Marine Dixon, I know Marine Roberts, I don't know whether it's the same thing. I don't know who owns PCI, PCI SA, Aero Frankie, something like that. Sorry? Aero Frankie. I do not know. But it would be quite an interesting one if you were to go through such an exercise. I'm aware that here at at hand we are dealing with a specific case that has been flighted in the media, purportedly to have had some wrongdoing. Until we got the details, as we have just gotten them now, the point is made by Mr. Chauke that says the matter is an ongoing. We would really wish to hear more about what is going on, but I would imagine we should be satisfied for now. If there are any other issues, those shall be dealt with at any given point in time. The questions have been raised, comments have been made, they have been responded to. I can safely say from where I am seated, they have indeed been adequately responded to or addressed. Not knowing if members would still have any further issues to raise. Mr. Basson Mamkaula noted.
Chairperson, I don't want to raise the issue. I just want to make a comment. I regard Brandwater as one of the best water boards we've got in the country, and they should guard against this kind of information going to the media. I want to add to what my colleague Honorable Charity said, is that you should come up and answer on every specific point that's been raised. Give the information. Let the people outside know. Get in the newspaper and give them that information. Because your reputation, you know, you give water to 12.5 million people in this country, and we regard you as a board that's doing, or as a entity that's doing excellent work. We all make mistakes, and I'm happy that you are not putting money outside that we can lose. If you upfront money for people to give guarantees for bringing in pumps, we understand that. That's how it normally works in the industry. But thanks for being open with us and give us that information on each and every question raised by the news, by the newspaper. Give us the answers on that. And on the tenders, who tendered, why did you decide to award this tender? Lastly, my comment is that we need more black companies to do the work. I also don't know all these people. My question would be, if this company that is under scrutiny now, that gets this a huge amount, do they do joint ventures with smaller black companies where we can start to create more of these companies? I'm not sure whether it's been done, but if not, in future, I think you should look at these companies. It's a black empowered company. They should take on board a smaller company also to empower them, so that in future you've got bigger, more companies to choose of, and you can even utilize that to create more jobs for more people in the country, and they could spread out to other provinces and go and work in other tender and other projects with municipalities, and I think you've got a huge task, and I really appreciate the work you are doing, and even complaints that we get. If we phone your COO, we really get instant replies on questions or comments. That, you know, we I'm happy with the way your board and all your personnel is working at Brandwater. I think myself and the chair went there when we had the water crisis in 2014. And they stopped everything. They took us through this, you know, and the quality of what we saw there was excellent. And myself and the chair, we were amazed with what we saw at Brandwater and what we've seen in other places. So I think you should protect that. It's something pressures that you should protect as a board and also your personnel in Randwater. Thank you, Chair.
That's free advertisement. You did hear that part.
I'm happy it's for free. Yeah.
Check is in the mail. Mam Kaula?
Kibonge Shlalo, kibonge nabasiz betu langa pambelo ba, ekonsen bona, funa bazi ukuthi njobela basiza thina njengegovernment noma lomzimba waka water and sanitation kusibonakala ukuthi uyasebenza. Afuna sibeke emuva kakhulu ukuthi if kukhona ama mistake nawo thina nathi siphakathi kona. No owami-ke umbuzo la ngifuna ukubhezelela lapha ke ngani zami ukuthi right-ke senibatholile labantu abanalo eziyinkampani mhlawumbe kade babesebenza. Ukwenza lento eshiwo honorable Bashondi ngemuva ukulekelela imiphakathi ukulwa nalento ebizwa ngokuthi poverty, ububha. Nenze njani kula bantu abasonkontrakti mhlawumbe laba abasafufusayo? Ngabe niyakwazi yini ukuthi nigcizelele ukuthi bakwazi ukuthola ukuthi basaphe ngaphansi? Okunye ebengifuna ukukwazi anda kulo mnyango yena sikhala yabona into eshiwo honorable Mngoni, sungazi kwamina ngiyahlanya mina ngidinwa ukuthi ngihamba sengiphambili ngirivese imoto ngiyibeke eceleni ngehle ngidavuze njengoba ngangikhala ukuthi e-ward 39 ukuthi khona kubuhlungu if umuntu uma ekhuluma kuba sengathi ulwa nawo nomunye umuntu, kanti no, it's not about that. Kuphela indlela ye-pain ngoba other side sikhala ukuthi amanzi awekho. Other side masithi siyahamba amanzi thotha yagobhoza imvula. La ngangikhala khona ukuthi e-ward 39 e-hostel amanzi kuyayixhazela ngikwenzayo ukuthi ukuqeda-ke lezo zinto. Naw kanjalo DJ ngifuna ungilalele baba kodwa ngemvumo kaSihlalo, khona le nto le yokuthatha le nto ebizwa ukuthi ama-skills, ukuthatha abantu emphakathini. Ngikhumbula ike yenzeka lapha kuthina eDurban, ukuthatha abantu wakhona ngisho abantu besifazane, iy'ngane, uthole seyikwazi ukuthi sezingoplamba ziyothathwa emphakathini zihambe ziyoqeqeshwa, iqeqeshelwe ukuthi if amapayipi aqhumile ziwalungise. And ngendlela engangibona kwenzeka ngayo kuzona kwase kumnandi, zijabulela nje ukuthi zinjani, zenza lowa msebenzi noma mhlambe kuthiwa ayikhokhelwanga. And la nto ngayithola iyinhle ngoba ekugcineni igcine lezi ngane seyikwazi ukuqasheka noma sezikwazi nazo ukuba ney'kontrakti. Kuyimanje ngingakutshela ukuthi kunemindeni eminingi manje eyayikade ingazi lutho ngokuthi ekhaya kuba khona ukulamba kodwa sebeyaplamba. Njengoba ngisho ukuthi ngisho ukujabulela babebona amanzi nje eyivuzela, umthole setatazela esewavimba eseyewalokhuza eyewavala ngenxa yokuthi wayenalela qolo lokujabulela ukubona leya nto. Ukuthi lithini lapho ngoba ezinye zezinto ezingasizi ukuthi la emphakathini nokuseva le nto ekuthiwa imali, sibathathe laba bantu bazoqeqeshwa basabalaliswa. Nalapho kuyeke ukuthi siyeke futhi ukubhekelela ukuthi ho iy'ngane zobani, kuthathwe nje abantu emphakathini. Yabona lezingane ezidla unyawupa ngoba eqinisweni izona kanye ezibe zibe yinkinga, ngoba nemiphakathi yethu inenkinga nayo iyahamba iyoqedula la mapayipi for uhambe iwadayisa kwesikrebhati. Last year sike saxoxa kakhulu indaba i-infrastructure beyintshontshwa iyodayiswa namaskrebhyadi ukuthi wona ayimukele izinto ngaloku kubheka ukuthi lo muntu bamenzela ibhizinisi lokuthi aqhubeka antshontshe. Lithi-ke elami kulolo hlelo-ke nithini njalo, ngabe niyalugqugquzela yini na? Ngithe intombazana umfana leya nto iyasisiza ngoba yena uzokwazi ngempela ukuthi kufanele ahambe namathuba omsebenzi azokwanziswa. Hayi lokho okunye ngoba sathi ukuthinta umndeni angisezukufaka ukugcina nje lapha kwa-Rainwater kuney'inkinga esihlangabezana nazo under Rainwater ukuthi mhlambe zinjani ningasitshelani ngazo sezinjani khumbula ukuthi khona la sasivakashe khona kwi-oversight esathola ukuthi kune-infrastructure ukuthola isirastile sindala ifuna ukulungiswa ngabe siyahamba yalungiswa yini na nala sahamba khona sathola indle esuka iyongena emfuleni ukuze kufofishe leya nto namanje sahlalahlala ingiphathi kambe emoyeni wami ma ngabe nayo impendulo ninganginika manje mani ngenayo aninayo kodwa nje ngifuna ukwazi ukuthi under Rainwater iy'nkinga esasike sihamba ngazo zenzenjani lilonke asilwinani lilonke sithi nathi sikhona emkhakheni ukuthi sifuna ukubona ushintsho lwenzeka ngiyabonga
Thank you, Chairperson. As a matter of follow-up, I'd like to give this question to Rainwater. Now, as an organization, what are you guys doing as an intervention or as interventions in place to assist the up-and-coming contractors so that they too can be empowered and that they can be able to reach the level of big players or contractors so that we are able to fight the scourge of poverty? Another question again to Rainwater. I do remember, Chairperson, that at one point we were on oversight as a committee and we identified certain dilapidated infrastructure and in your jurisdiction. And I would like to know that what has happened to that, or are you able to deal with that, or what are you having as far as that is concerned? To the DG, I remember that there was a community program that took place at some point where young people were absorbed. Therefore, I'd like to know that what is it that you guys are doing? I remember that that created an excitement, not only an excitement, but it also developed skills for young people. Are you also working on that? So those are the parts that I wanted to ask. But I also wanted to ask about Umgeni Water, and she just decided to drop that question. Thank you.
Sorry.
You can switch off, sir.
Okay. Oh, sure. No. I think let us not lose the focus on Mlanje. The points that are raised by my fighter, Comrade Kaula, they're very critical with the comment made by Honorable Person. You're already wrapping the meeting, Chair. I think proceed to wrap. Panga respond on these issues. The fighter will note them. When Mabaza for the annual report, yeah, we can then deal with these issues that the Comrade Mamkaula is raising, because they will have to form part of that annual report as identified in the process, so that we don't lose the essence of the engagement today and what we have managed to achieve. So I want to propose that, Chair, proceed with the closing of your meeting, and then a thing I will and then we'll deal with you Manzi. And I think my fighter will agree with me in that line. My revolutionary fighter, you agree with me.
you want to respond to a few of those comments? They're straightforward.
Before you close it, I would just want to appreciate the comments and say we take them seriously and we appreciate them. And maybe the only thing, you see I'm looking at him, the only thing we didn't respond to is the idea of advanced payment
and
storytelling.
He is the principal.
Is that?
He is the principal.
He is the principal. And I wouldn't want to leave that one hanging, and I'm disappointed that I did such a bad job that he thought it was storytelling. It's really, and you know, within the framework of the contract and the legislation, we feel confident that whether it's the AG or outsourced external auditor, that this is explainable in terms of why these payments were made. They were in terms of the contract. The provisions of the contract are allowed as per legislation, as per the highlighted section that we provided, and we it's the one area where we really feel that the answer is clear cut, in fact. in terms of the allegation that was made about advance payment. That's the easiest in terms of objective method to be able to dispel. The others may be harder because the innuendos are difficult to respond to, but this one, I think, on clear objective information, is the easiest to dispel, Chairperson, the advance payment issue.
Okay, we're dealing with an issue that is work in progress. However, the issues raised in the media, they have been responded to from questions raised by members. The very first, very straightforward questions, and also met with straightforward responses. Let's thank the board, let's thank the department, let's thank the minister, let's thank the management team led by the CEO for having made time to come before us. We have that responsibility. We have that duty as members of parliament. For the executive, for the department, for its entities, as and when we deem it fit on our part, we schedule accordingly, you know, within our program, that we get you to come and account. So that's our responsibility as part of our oversight work. We have just done that. We thank you for having made time, and apologies that we had to talk to you, or rather inform you about having to come before us as a full complement of your board. We don't usually do that, but in certain circumstances we do make it our responsibility that we bring all of you here. Members, thanks on this specific one. We have been advised that we have one set of minutes that we can dispel. You have received copies. I'm sure it won't take us more than 15 minutes. Let's take a 10-minute break. Then and we'll come back here, say, at 5 to 12.
Thank you.
I suspect there is tea outside. I suspect. If there is none...
Thank you.
So that when we come to that stage,
My apologies, I just, you know, just came to mind now. On page one of the minute, we were dealing with 8 sets of minutes. No spell check of anybody's name or the political party's names are there. Mr. Gallo is spelled correctly, no LL there, it's only one L. Mrs. Bilangulu was still Mrs. Bilangulu then. She's now Mrs. What? And Mr. Mguni is still a member of the committee. There is nothing that says he's an alternate. There is no asterisk. There's no asterisk on next to his name. Where is he? Still consulting. And page 2, we add the requisite number, am I right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Page 2 on minute, page 2 on our minutes. Mr. Carl moved and then seconded by Mrs. Kekana. Matters arising. National Water Master Plan. Continuous change of leadership in the management. Minister to address the following legislative review process. Timeline for completion. Manner in which waters are located. Where is Joy? Page 3.
Could I just ask, you were not present at that meeting. I made announcements in that meeting that Honorable Balinlela is no longer a member of Parliament, and she's thus no longer a member of the Spirituality Committee, where they should be minuted. Please.
Okay. Mandy has taken note of that. Page 4. Okay. Page 5. Any mover? Mr. Makonda has moved. Seconded by Mr. Passon. Correct. Thanks very much. The last point I wanted to raise has got to do with the correspondence that I received from Mr. Passon. The municipality in Northwest, it's called Naledi Municipality. That's now private in those areas. Apparently there's a serious issue of water availability. Mr. Person is of the view that the municipality must be brought here for counting. Having gone through the letter itself, and clearly there you are dealing with an issue that has to do with a municipality, in this instance, Copter. The line is very thin. These are the issues that also Mam Carola raises all the time, without fail. As to how we deal with them, it's a very important issue. Now, linked to this is another announcement that talks to a SALGA conference. We are honored and privileged in this committee that Mr. Manyoni has invited us as president of SAGA. The conference is taking place on the 28th to the 1st of November, December. On the 30th, we are expected to meet as a committee. But there is this very important SAGA conference. Mr. Manyoni, we received a letter from you, sir. Thanks for that. He is an outgoing president of SAGA. He has to preside over his conference. I'm mentioning it because the issues that we are talking about, the department, I did raise it with the DG, and also clearly, you know, he agreed with my analogy that says the matter resides squarely. The municipalities have their own major problems, not only Eskom, even these water boards. They owe them 3.1 billion. Municipality of Eskom, owing them the biggest 2 billion rand. This is a matter that resides squarely in the domain of COCTA. As to how is COCTA assisting these municipalities, not only Naledi, not only what is the new name for Welcome? Majalaneng or something like that. Not Majalaneng, Machabeng. Now, now you have a number of these other municipalities. I guess we haven't been able to focus and be able to say, we've always been talking about, and the list we do have it by now, those 27 hotspots, districts. We've always been talking about those 27 hotspot districts. And we haven't been able to, together with COCTA, how best we intervene. There are specific challenges that relate to a number of these municipalities. They vary. They are not the same. Others are owing, and others have their own issues. And perhaps one of the other major issues when we work together with these municipalities, you remember the as part of their back to basic program, they have a 10% of their total budget that is supposed to be allocated, ring-fenced on maintenance. And they are not doing that, a number of them. Now, part of that solution, which is the point you are raising in your correspondence, must address that issue of maintenance. It's well and good to have municipalities that are running efficiently, but if there is no maintenance, that infrastructure within no time is going to be history. If there is no conscious program that says, ring-fence, deal with maintenance, this budget is not going to go to any golf tournament. This budget is not going to go to any of these other social, you know, programs of the mayors. It is only going to deal with these issues. To a point where, and these issues are identified and budgeted for. There's a plan. It's not going to be like thumbsucked. There's a plan for this coming year, financial year, that part of this maintenance, it must talk to areas A, B, C, D of that particular municipality. And as such, accordingly, here is a budget. So that's the take I took. We did not get into those details when I spoke to the DG. you want to say something, Mr. Poisson? No,
Jefferson, yes, the COPTA has also, there was also a letter written to COPTA, and Minister, Deputy Minister Nell has already responded to that, that we'll take this matter up with the DG, because there's numerous issues, but at the end of the day, people don't get water. Now, Jefferson, I think we've discussed this numerous times. The structures are wrong. Water and sanitation on provincial level, there should be an MEC for water and sanitation. And exactly the same within COPTA, because now it's, how do we do our oversight work when we want to summons a municipality because of the failure of delivering water, then it's a COPTA matter. So it's there's two different ministers concerning this matter. So I understand the situation, and maybe on Naledi, if COPTA then summons Naledi to appear before the portfolio committee, maybe then we should sit in that meeting as members, which we can, and then drive the issues of water via COPTA. But I think in future, Chairperson, we know we've got a legislation coming up. We want some change in the legislation. I don't know what is the feeling of other members of the House, but my take on it is that water should run right through from this, from the department, one minister, right through the legislature. Water and sanitation is going to be the biggest issue for this country for years to come, because of the vast amount that needs to be spent on infrastructure. And if it's going to be cross-border one to COPTA, we're not going to reach it, because there's not support from the from Northwest to that municipality. But that's a COPTA matter. It's not, we cannot deal with that matter. So I understand your taking. I was requested to do that. I thought about it. I did discuss it with our member on COPTA. We wrote a letter. The Deputy Minister already replied. He would take up the matter urgently with the DG of COPTA concerning that municipality. Because there's more problems of infrastructure. The 200 and odd million rand to there's going to be load shedding on electricity. It's going to have a huge effect on the community, because the municipality don't ring fence their money. They are not earning money now, enough money on electricity to pay Eskom. Now they fall behind, and they do not maintain the infrastructure. I understand your point, Chairperson. I take your point on that as well.
Mr. Chaffee?
No, thanks, Chair. No, I think the point raised by Honourable Bosson is a correct point. But I think what we need to do, Chair, we have this outstanding meeting, the joint meeting with COPTA, deal with issues of infrastructure and related issues, capacity of the municipality to deal with issues of water. Well, the issue of MEC in the province is a policy thing, that one, I think, I may not want to get into that space now, but the point that is raising is very clear. What we must do, Chair, is that, and especially now that we're going to, you said you're going to, with invite to Salga. I think this invite maybe will give us an opportunity at that level to highlight the frustrations that we go through on the issues of our portfolio, and try to forge a relationship there, you know. Working with Salga can help a lot, in fact, to assist in the challenges that municipalities are faced with, and to work with them, identify the challenges around water related problem. So it's correct, Chair, but I think let us push that. We have that meeting with COPTA, a joint meeting with COPTA, where the Minister of COPTA can be invited and our Minister, and find a solution on the issues of infrastructure at the municipality level, which you know that we end up having to deal with this issue with your rent water and the rest of the implementing agency, because of lack of capacity at the municipality level to deal with water-related issues. So I think, Chair, that's how we should take it. and just note the fact that it's a point that we'll have to resolve as a matter of agenda. Maybe we can deal with it next year when we look at the next year's program, Chair. Maybe we can look at the slot where we have already agreed that there must be a need, there's a need to meet with local government, and I think maybe we can utilize that space there, and not only the issue raised by us, Honourable Person, but general issues that we want to deal with COPTA. And with the experience of Comrade Williams, who's here, it will help us a lot, in fact, as to how we can package our input when we deal with COPTA, having looked at our problems, so that in that meeting we're able to even to guide some of the issues that Comrade Person is raising are specifically capacity related issues. Now, what do we do in a situation where the municipality does not have total, so even to maintain the reservoir, to maintain purification systems and all of that, that becomes a challenge, Chair. But I think let's agree with the point that you are making, that let's package it to another level.
Shall we then say regarding our program for next week, we shall have to re-look at it in the light of the invitation for the SAGA conference in Johannesburg.
Is that the 30th?
It's 28th until the 1st.
We should also just like,
Note that on the 30th, it's our cluster where the minister answers questions in Parliament as well.
All of those they shall be taken into account. Whether we take that entire 28th to the 1st, or we take 2 or 3 days within that invitation, those shall be the details. Having looked at our program. Okay, members, I think that should be it for now. Until we meet again next week. Guided by the few details that we just spoken about. This meeting is adjourned. Thanks.
Oh, I want to step forward. Yeah, you should be.